Hi again. I'm now looking at page 7 of the lecture 1 slides. If you look at the top, there is two very important organizations. One is Basel I. It's a voluntary global regulatory framework on bank capital adequacy, stress testing and market liquidity risk. And it's a very, if you're going to work in the financial industry or in the insurance industry, or your job is going to be sort of having contacts with this, you have to know what Basel III is. So it's a very good idea if you stop the sound clip now and click on Basel III, click on the other three links too, and try to understand what Basel III is. If we're like, maybe also one of the reading projects will be on Basel III, which would be very good. Solvency II is the corresponding thing for the insurance industry. It's a directive in European Union law that codifies and harmonizes the EU insurance regulation. Primarily, this concerns the amount of capital that insurance companies must hold to reduce the risk of failure. And again, it's a very good idea that you stop the sound clip and look at the links. It's also good to understand that these are not laws. They are things which have to, the rules from Basel III and Solvency II. They are sort of background for laws, and then the individual companies, individual countries, or the EU as a whole, or countries outside of the EU, has to redo the recommendations or the frameworks into national laws. So these are important. You need to understand what they are, and you will meet them later on. The rest of this slide is a little bit of a parenthesis. It talks about risk factors, which is something which is very much used in financial risk modeling and financial modeling in general. And it's good to know what they are, what they mean. And the idea is you're interested in the loss or the risks of loss. So that's L, and it's by definition, you might in a company or or maybe an insurance company, you'll maybe a bank or an insurance company, you're interested in the risk of losing things, and then the total loss is you get by getting all the losses and then deduct the profits. And risk factor modeling is that you believe that the loss, capital L, is a function of D risk factors. They are here called X1 up to XD. So L is F of X1 up to XD. It's a function of the risk factors. And the risk factors typically are macroeconomic quantities like exchange rates, interest rates, index movements, stock prices, but they could also be more specialized thing which sort of take into account the specific situation or branch or whatever you're interested in. And a typical example of a risk factor modeling is what comes next in the example. You think of a linear portfolio and you want to model the L, the loss from a linear portfolio. So the idea is that you have alpha I shares of stock I, and the stock price at time t is st comma I. And then what the loss then is that you look at what you have tomorrow, you deduct that from what you have today. So today, that's a second sum, the amount of money or the amount of value from your stock portfolio is you take the amount you have of stock number one, you multiply it by its price, that's alpha one, ST one. Then you take the amount you have of stock number two, the numbers of stocks number two, and then multiply it by its price. So that's alpha two times ST two. And then you go on like this, and then you get the second sum. So that's what the value of your stock portfolio today. Then you deduct the value tomorrow. And if this is negative, you make a loss. If this is positive, you make a gain, a profit. And again, you can now see how the formula works. You start by taking the amount of stock, which is alpha one, that's a stock one, and then you multiply it by the price tomorrow, and then you do this for two, three, and up to D. And it's very, and so here the thing after the first equality sign is just a loss, but it's very convenient to rewrite it completely trivially as in this after the second equation. So the loss is minus the sum of alpha I STI divided by ST plus 1 I minus STI divided by STI. And the idea is that the factor in parentheses that tells you how much which fraction of the price you lost in this stock from today to tomorrow. And that's what one really typically wants to model, because the price per stock is just the price per unit of stock, but your interest is really in the total amount of money you have invested in the stocks. So the total amount of money in stock number one, that's alpha one, ST one, and so this is the quantity of interest, and then you want to see how much that changes, and that changes by the quantity, the fraction you have in parentheses. And this is an important thing and very much used, and we'll not use it very much in this course, or maybe not at all. But I think it's important you see it, and it's also an explanation why we typically will want to model the thing in the last parentheses. These are maybe the returns or the negative returns, or these are the returns of the stock. Okay, so the main question we'll address in this course and try to think about and learn about and get methods for handling, it's a question on the top of the next page, page 8, and that is, how big is a risk? And there are many different methods to address this, and I'll talk a little bit about few of them which are here. And we'll look at quantitative risk management methods. That's what we're doing in this course. But again, I want to remind you of Taleb's Turkey. One needs to think outside of the quantitative modeling. One needs to do things which take into account what could happen, how does the world work, what is the sort of general setup of the risks you're looking at. And I think actually it's important that any company which is exposed to substantial financial risks does this systematically. And systematically means that you sort of set up a group of people with very varying competences, very varying backgrounds, and then you try to make them think out of the box what could happen that we haven't thought about. What could make our modeling wrong? How can we understand things better? I think reinsurance companies nowadays do this. It's less clear to what extent banks and insurance companies do it. Now a list of quantitative risk management methods. Historical data or historical simulation. You wonder about how can we use experience? Well, you have data. There's always lots and lots of data on financial, the prices of financial instruments. And you have data. Say you have stock data for 10 years. And then you want to use them seeing what are the risks. Well, maybe what are the risks for the next week? Well, you look at what were the risks all the weeks in the data you have, or what were the sort of behavior during a month and what happens then, or you try to find a month or a year which sort of just looks like the present, or fairly well looks like the present, and then you use this for prediction and trying to understand how big the risk is. One important drawback of this way of doing things with historical data is that you don't get outside of the range of the data. So if risks now are much bigger than they were during the last 10 years, you won't catch that by historical data and historical simulation. And that in particular just right now is caught by the corona epidemic. There's no way that one can use historical simulation for that. Maybe a little bit of data from the financial crisis, but still, corona is very much different. The next thing is stress testing. And that means you do a scenario, and how will that hurt your value? So you're a bank, and then the financial authorities tell you, you have to do stress testing. You have to think what will happen to your liquidity and what would happen to your risk if the underlying factors change, if the risk factors change. So what will happen exchange rate for the Swedish crown goes down by 10%? What will happen if inflation goes up? What will happen if... And then there's lots and lots of different things they can do. And then they put these together to a scenario. And then the banks or the financial institutions or the insurance companies are asked to investigate. How does that affect us? Does this make us go bankrupt, or can we handle it? Then there's something called sensitivity measures, which are sort of derivatives of what happens when if things change. They call the Greeks, and if you take a option handling course, you will see those. What one can also do is full statistical modeling. So what you often do then is you say you have a portfolio with 100 stocks, and you want to know how big are the risks with this portfolio. And what one then often did is you assume that the prices or the returns really are multivariate normal, and then that you have a linear portfolio. And then you have a full statistical model, and this gives you a measure of risk. It has for quite some time been understood that univariate normal doesn't work, so the risks, the tails, we'll talk about this, of the distributions much in the rest of the course, they don't fit. The variation of the stock prices are much bigger than the multivariate normal. But then one could do transformations, so the one-dimensional distributions or have heavier tails, show more risk, and then you can use that for modeling. But and still use the dependent structure you get from the normal distribution. This was very much done before the financial crisis, and it's been claimed this was one of the reasons that the Great Recession became as bad as it did become, because these multivariate normal distributions say that if you have very big values, very big losses, then the losses are almost independent. And this is completely contrary to what happens in reality. If things go really bad, it go really bad for most sectors, most stocks, most things. So it was quite a lot used, the full statistical modeling using the multivariate normal. It was not a good idea, and presumably is less done now. Another option is the semi-parametric modeling of the tails of capital L, the loss, the distribution of the loss profit distribution. And this will do by univariate extreme value statistics. This is what this course will do. Okay, then a further possibility is to do semi-parametric modeling of the tails of the multivariate distribution of the risk factor. So this is multivariate extreme value statistics, also sometimes is about some uses something called copulus, and then you use this for computation of the loss profit distribution. Either you can get formulas or else you just do Monte Carlo. And this is a sort of very hot area in research on semi-parametric extreme value statistics. And things are happening very rapidly, but it's not by no means any consensus on what is the best way of doing it. We're all learning and we're all developing the theory. And that's a central interest of my own research right now. So maybe a next slide, the slide after slide 8, is taken from a popular presentations I've given a few times. And that talks about how does one approach this central question of this course. The question is how big is the risk? And then one way of thinking is you want to do it using statistical distribution, statistical theory. But how does that work? Well, then one somehow starts with mathematics. Mathematics suggests what are the shapes of the possible risk distributions, which distributions, which statistical distributions seem reasonable to use, and why are they reasonable to use. And then statistics, well, then it says, well, we choose a specific risk distribution, and also this distribution will typically be a parametric distribution which has some unknown parameters. And then you use statistical methods to estimate the parameters, and then also to estimate, to get measures of the uncertainties of the estimations. And this, at the end of this process, you have an estimated risk distribution, which quantifies risk and also quantifies the uncertainty in the risk estimates. And then you sort of present this perhaps via something called value at risk. We'll talk more about it later, as I already said, or expect a shortfall, or perhaps more multivariate measures. So sort of how does all this work? Well, you do mathematics, and people have done mathematics, which tells you what are reasonable distributions. Then you do statistics to fit these distributions to data, and then you have a risk distribution, which is what you present to the people who make the decisions. And it turns out that mathematics says that The standard distributions you learned in the first basic course of statistics, this is not what you would be sensible to use in measuring extreme risks. And the standard distribution, very important, fantastically useful, is a normal distribution. That is what you've learned a lot about. And an example where this is perfect is the, at least in the olden time, when you measure distance, well, then you measure distance from, say, from Gotham, from place A to place B, and then you measure distance from place B to place C, place C to place D, and so on. And then when you wanted to get the distance from A to D, you just added these measurements. So the distance to place D is just a sum of three measured distances, and each of the measurements has errors, hopefully small errors, but the total error then is the in the measured distance is just then the sum of many small measurement errors. And mathematics says that very often the sum of many small errors or many small contributions often have a normal distribution. And you see the graph on the left, what the normal distribution looks like. And that's something you've seen many times. But this doesn't work so well for extremes. To the left, on the bottom left, you see an example of an extreme, that's a big flood. And then you might be interested in what is the distribution of the highest water level during a year. Well, how does one think about that? That's not the sum of many small errors. And a better way of thinking of it is it's the maximum of daily water levels during the year. And if you do the mathematics, which look at maxima of many, many individually small things, then you don't get the normal distribution, but you get the generalized extreme value distribution. So that's what you see on the plot on the bottom left. And that's what we'll look at a lot in this course. So going from sums to maxima means going from the normal distribution to the generalized extreme value distribution. So what the first part of the course will be is about extreme value statistics, EVS. This is a branch of statistics which has explicitly been developed to handle extreme risks. And the philosophy is simple. Extreme events, perhaps extreme water levels or extreme financial losses, they are often quite different from ordinary everyday behavior. And ordinary everyday behavior has little to say about extremes, so that only other extreme events give useful information about future extreme events. So if you think about financial losses, say losses on the stock market, when there is a big panic, people typically behave, the traders typically behave completely differently from how they behave during sort of normal, steady, boring, everyday times. And so when you do statistics on ordinary times, you don't learn much. It doesn't help you to understand behavior during risky situations. So if you want to understand risk and model risk, you should only use the situations which are sort of similar to the ones you're afraid of will happen. And this is the same if you look at environmental risks, of course. Say rainfalls, when they are very extreme, the physics about them are quite different than the standard physics of rainfalls. Or the physics of very intense windstorms, again, is quite different from ordinary wind, how that functions physically. So page 11 will give the sort of an overview of what we'll do in the extreme value statistics part of this course. And the basic extreme value statistics, EVS, it has two different methods, two different basic methods. One is the block maxima method. That is, then what you do then is that you observe maxima. You might say maybe maximum yearly losses, or maybe maxima weekly losses, or maxima monthly losses, or maxima of some other quantity over some other time period of some interesting thing. And then you believe, for the reasons, these mathematical reasons I've told you about, and we'll say more about later, is that a generalized extreme value distribution is a good first try of modeling this distribution. So what you then do, if you do the basic extreme value statistics, is that you get observations of monthly losses for the maximum monthly losses for the last 10 years, and then you assume these are independent, and then you fit a generalized extreme value distribution to this observation, and that gives you the risk distribution, and then you're done. You can tell people how big are the risks, what are the uncertainties in the estimates of how big are the risks. Of course, then things become more complicated. In real life, maybe there's a dependence between, say, months, maybe less dependence between years, and dependence generally is not a big issue when you do the block maxima model. The second model is instead the peaks over thresholds modeling. That is, instead of maxima, you look at just the large values. So say you look at, you're interested in daily losses, whether daily losses, how large can daily losses be? That will sort of, to a large extent, have an important impact on your daily trading. And what you do then is you decide somehow, we'll talk a lot about that later, some threshold. Say the stock price is the loss in the returns is more than 10%, then this is pretty bad. And then what you do is you look at all the days where the negative returns were smaller than, say, 5%, and then you fit a generalized Pareto distribution to these observations. And that's then what you use to get the risk distribution. And I'll talk more about what is a generalized Pareto distribution and why does one use it. And a little bit about why comes later down on the slide. One reason why this is good is stability. This has the very attractive mathematical these two distribution has the very attractive mathematical stability property, which one then hopes that the real world also has. One hopes that the world will be as simple as possible, and this is being as simple as possible. This is Occam's razor, maybe. And the stability for the generalized extreme value distribution says that maxima variables which are generalized extreme value distributed are also generalized extreme value distributed. So say if you believe that monthly maxima have a generalized extreme value distribution, and that they are reasonably independent, then also the yearly maxima will have an extreme value distribution. And you can compute, if you know the distribution of the monthly maxima, from that you can use mathematics to compute the distribution of the yearly maxima. And you can also actually go the other way around. If you believe in independence and that the model fits well, then you can go from the yearly maxima to the monthly maxima. Okay, the generalized Pareto distribution, which you don't know about yet, has the same property. If you look at negative returns which are bigger than 5%, and if those have a generalized extreme value distribution, then also the negative returns which have which exceed 6% also have a generalized Pareto distribution. So the distribution is stable. It doesn't change when you go to higher levels. So it doesn't change both for the generalized extreme value distribution or for the generalized Pareto distribution. Means that the form of the distribution is the same, but the parameters change. There are typically three parameters: as a location and a scale, and the shape parameter for the generalized extreme value distribution. And there is a intensity, shape, and scale parameter in generalized Pareto distribution. And these change, not the one of them don't change. The shape parameter doesn't change, but the other parameters change as you go to higher levels. But the good thing is that you know how they change. You can do this just by computation. And this is sort of the same as in standard statistics. In standard statistics, one of the really good reasons for using normal distributions is that sums of normally distributed values have a normal distribution. So if you move sums, change sums to maxima or to going to higher levels, then this is the same stability motivation. The more standard motivation, this is what you will see most usually if you read on the web or other places, is asymptotics. And that says that maxima of many independent variables are often approximately generalized extreme value distributed. Asymptotically, tails or generalized Pareto distributed when maxima has an extreme value distribution. Just again, as in standard statistics, sums of many small errors are often approximately normally distributed. This is a central limit theorem, of course, which you've seen. So you change sums to maxima, and then you get the generalized extreme value distribution and the generalized Pareto distribution. And it's also very useful that transition is easy. It's easy to go back and forth between generalized Pareto and generalized extreme value. And of course, don't believe in the models blindly. Look at the data, think about the real world situation. But still, the good idea is to start with using the generalized extreme value, the generalized Pareto distribution, and see if they fit, and then you're done. If they don't fit, you do something else. And this is very important also sort of for learning. If we all start with trying the same distribution, we learn from one another in a much better way than if everybody uses their own favorite distribution. To do a little bit of a parenthesis, this is what's often done in hydrology. Every sort of researcher uses their own favorite distribution, and they use a different distribution in different places, and then you don't learn from one another. Okay, so this was sort of the general picture of the course. In the next sound clip, I'll start talking about the details, the mathematical details and the practical details. And that's, I'll put it in tomorrow's lecture. But if you want to start looking at it even now, of course you won't hurt at all. And finally, feedback on my slides, feedback on my sound clips, feedback on anything of the course is very much appreciated. Please, let's work together to make the course as fun and good as possible. So, talk to you tomorrow again.